Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Tuesday, August 2nd, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. We have a guest that we've been waiting for quite some time now. He's the author of this book, No Beauty in the Beast, and there hasn't been a book that we've been disimpressed with for in a long time. His name is Mark Glenn, and we have a lot to talk to him about, so we'd like to welcome Mr. Mark Glenn to Wing TV.
Mark, I've had my head buried in this book for endless hours.
Well, thank you. I had my head buried in it for endless months.
Yeah. Yeah, putting it together. Now, before we get started, Mark, why don't you tell everyone how they can find your website?
Okay, you can. My website's dedicated to selling my two books. I have several places that publish my works, but if you'd like to order my books, the hard copy version of my books, you can go to www.notmywords.com or simply email me at mrkglenn@yahoo.com.
All right, very good. Now, we're going to talk about not only your book during this interview, but also what's going on in the Middle East today. So the first question I have for you, I want to read a quote. And one of the best parts about your book is that opening chapter where you have literally hundreds of quotes that are so eye-opening. But this one comes from Ariel Sharon. He made it on October 3rd, 2001. And he was saying it to the Foreign Minister Shimon Peres on Kol Israel Radio. He said, "Every time we do something, you tell me America will do this and do that. I want to tell you something very clear. Don't worry about American pressure on Israel. We, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it." What are your thoughts on that quote?
Well, I'd say that when he's talking about that the Americans know it, I would say that he may be talking about the power elite in America.
Right.
Certainly the average American does not know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have to put that in that kind of context. But certainly the implications of that are staggering, not only the fact that most Americans do not realize it, but at the same time, it also is important in that the Zionist power structure no longer has to worry about hiding it. He can come out on the radio and say these things and not have to worry about the backlash that would be attached to them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In your book, you address the religions of the Middle East as well, and you say that the adherents of Islam seem to take Zionism the most seriously. They seem to see it in its clearest form and understand it as the danger, you know, that it presents to the world. So, my question is it any coincidence that we are now attacking Muslims?
No, I think that it's perfectly planned that way. When you understand that Zionism is an expansionist and a very aggressive ideology, and that it seeks to eliminate all obstacles in its course to power, and when you see that all the other institutions of the world, at least the Christian institutions, Western civilization, that they have all they're all buckling under the weight of the destruction that they have had to endure for the last century. When you see that Islam is the only thing that has been left standing, then it makes perfect sense then why would we would be over there fighting these wars in removing the last obstacle to total world domination.
Yeah, and that's a great point that you brought out in your book. That's near mm-hmm. the end of it. Now, anyone that watches Wing TV knows that we don't mamby-pamby around here. We ask the hard questions. And last week we interviewed filmmaker Mark Farrell, and that interview is actually going to be broadcast this upcoming Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But we asked him point blank about the Holocaust. We said, how many people do you think, how many Israel or Jewish people actually died during World War II at the hands of the Nazis? His response was that he thought about 200,000 to 300,000 only. And when we asked him about the crematoriums and also the gas chambers, how many died, he says he doesn't think any died by that means. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, my thoughts on it is that I am not as well versed on that topic to be able to speak definitively about it. I know that there are many people who have researched this, and interestingly enough, a lot of them have been Jewish themselves.
Uh-huh.
There was an excellent video that was put out several years ago by a young man named David Cole, and he actually went to Auschwitz and a few of the other places and investigated it, and went in as a Jew, and he showed how the modern interpretation, modern explanation of what happened during the Holocaust could not be possible. Having said that, though, what I will say is that whether or not 6 million died or not, I think that what we really have to concentrate on is the political power that has been attached to this thing.
That's right.
You know, when I get into these discussions with folks about this topic, I say, I don't know. I guess it's possible that 6 million died. Maybe it's possible more did. But I think that we should not make the mistake of thinking that somehow that this is a special event in and of itself, because certainly we know that 10 times as many people, 10 times as many Christians died in Bolshevik Russia. So if we are going to quantify these things, then there should be all kinds of Holocaust museums
right
to the Christians of Russia.
Let me follow up with my only Holocaust question, and this is just for your opinion. If the world were to ever find out that the officially accepted story of the Holocaust was in any way inaccurate, what do you think the ramifications would be and the world reaction?
Well, the ramifications are extremely powerful, obviously, and the other side understands this. This is why they go apoplectic whenever anybody of any kind of repute comes forward and questions it. We need look no further than what happened to David Irving and Prince Sundell and a few others. And so they are terrified of this information being discussed in any kind of rational way, as they are terrified of any kind of open discussion concerning the Zionist atrocities in the Middle East. So this is the goose that lays the golden egg, so to speak, in terms of them having an open blank check for executing their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They can always use this as a bludgeon to silence anybody who criticizes anything.
Right.
And we also know that Ernst Zundel was imprisoned in this country simply not for committing a crime, but just for his ideas. Now, another one of the big taboo subjects that hardly anyone seems to want to discuss is that the Nazis and the Zionists, before and during World War II, were actually working together for the same goals. And the goal was to get the Jews out of Europe so that they could create this new nation called Israel. And we even have facts that Adolf Eichmann met with the Zionists in Vienna in 1938. So what are your thoughts on these two groups working together?
Well, obviously, you know, anybody who understands the nature of these two ideologies, they both are National Socialism and they both are ethnocentric, okay, whereas you have one side that their supremacist ideology is based on worship of the Aryan race, and the other side is based on the worship of the Jewish race. So ideologically speaking, there is nothing about the two that opposes the other. They actually are birds of a feather. Okay, having said that as well, and following up on what you're saying, they also had a common goal, which was to move the Jews out of Europe, at least out of Germany. And so, you know, the reference that you're making of Eichmann having met with them, this is an established fact. Even the Supreme Court of Israel heard a case several years ago involving this thing, and it was proven in this case that Dr. Rudolf Kastner met with Eichmann and that he actually negotiated for the deportation of 800,000 Romanian Jews, or Hungarian Jews, one of the two, to these camps. So here we have a Zionist, one of the highest ranking members of the Zionist organization at that time, negotiating with the Nazis to subject the Jews of Europe to this very same Holocaust that we're always hearing about on a day-by-day basis. Mm-hmm.
You characterize Jesus as the founding father of the anti-Zionist movement, and I love this about your book, that you portrayed Jesus in more than a one-dimensional way, which is the popularly accepted image of him. What did Jesus see in the power structure of the Sanhedrin that caused him to openly challenge the ruling classes of Israel?
Well, when we look at Jesus in this way, and this is the way that I try to portray him in this book, is that he is a first-century rendition of William Wallace. Unfortunately, Christianity has for too long only seen Jesus in this one-dimensional figure, in that he was here to speak nice things and to save men's souls. But he also had practical concerns as well, which was that he wanted to save humanity from this beast that was in their midst. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the challenges that he put forth during Holy Week, the week in which he was going to be killed, he spent the entire week picking fights with this entity, the Sanhedrin, challenging them and their ethnocentricity, okay, the fact that they worship themselves and look down their noses upon everybody else. And then he spent a good portion of his time warning anyone who would listen, particularly when he cast his seven woes at the Pharisees. And in essence, when you read between the lines of what he was saying, what he was telling humanity is, look, people, you have got to keep your eyes on this animal over here. Okay? Mm-hmm. They are the children of the devil. And if they ever claw their way to the peak of power, you're going to have a real mess on your hands.
Yeah.
And just to accentuate this point, watch what they do to me, because if they will do this to me, meaning that they will use corrupting influences to worm their way into the power structure of the time, use bribery, blackmail, torture, and murder to eliminate any of their enemies. If they'll do this to me now in first century Palestine, imagine what they're going to do 2,000 years from now when they have all the power in the world available.
Well, what they did was they committed deicide, and I know in my mind, I see the Zionists today as modern-day Pharisees,
right.
And in your book, you list some of Jesus' reaction to the Jewish religious elite at the time. He called them a brood of vipers. They were whitewashed tombs. They were serpents and wolves. Mark, what do you think Jesus' reaction would be to the Zionists of today?
Well, I think his first reaction would be to the Christian world, who was the inheritor of this great legacy that he left behind, which was, you fools, why didn't you listen to me? I warned you about these people. I told you to keep this beast in mind and to keep him caged up, and then you let this beast out of its cage willingly, and now you're paying the price for it. That would be, in the way I imagine, that would be his first reaction. Second reaction would be, and the thing obviously that we have to hope for is that he will put this beast to death again, the way that he did 2,000 years ago. When he preached this humanitarian and this universal message of brotherhood of all mankind, instead of one race being dominant above all the others, this was the water that was thrown upon the fire of dangerous Zionist ideology mm-hmm. at that time. And so I think that if and when this day comes, that he comes back to slay this beast, it will be exactly in this way. And I do believe, and I know I get quite a few raised eyebrows when I say this, but I do believe that it will be through those in the Middle East that this takes place.
George Bush characterizes Ariel Sharon as a man of peace, and we support him with money and praise here in the United States. Yet he made this quote, which is very disturbing. He said, "I vow that I'll burn every Palestinian child that will be born in this area. The Palestinian children are more dangerous than the men because the Palestinian child's existence infers that generations will go on." So what's the difference between the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians and Herod's slaughter of the innocents?
That's exactly the truth, and this is one of the things. I know we like to get angry at George Bush, but you have to remember that he is just the puppet. He's mm-hmm. not the hand in the puppet. When he says these things, he's only saying them because it's been given to him on a piece of paper by his advisors and his speechwriters, many of whom are dual loyalists. Okay, that's number one. Number two, Ariel Sharon in his mention of slaughtering the Palestinian children, that's exactly the truth. He is a modern-day Herod. He is the ultimate abortionist in the Middle East. And so when he says these things, and by the way, these things, blood-curdling as they are, they're just one in a mountain of equal things. He is the modern-day Herod. His business of going about and slaughtering these children deliberately, okay, shooting them in the head, leaving bombs for them
sport.
To pick up. This is a deliberate program of ethnically cleansing Israel, making it ethnically pure for God's chosen people. And mm-hmm. it is a maddening thing to listen not only to George Bush, but to others who boldly call themselves Christians, that they stand by this man when he says these things.
Right. They don't call him the butcher for no reason. Now, within the last week or so, the Israeli military said that they would unleash a massive ground attack against the Palestinians if they interfered with the Gaza pullout. Now, when we consider how Israel attacked the USS Liberty, their role in the Levant affair, and also how they dressed up as Arabs to bomb the King David Hotel, what are the odds that this could conveniently happen, except that the perpetrators could actually be the Israeli Mossad or the defense in the guise of Arabs or Palestinians?
Well, I think that was the plan all along. You know that Ariel Sharon he does not have a kind sentiment in his anywhere in idea of giving up this land that they have always considered historically to be Israel,
mm-hmm.
you know that there's something up his sleeve when he's doing this. So it has been my contention for a while that what is actually at work here is that they plan a massive slaughter of Palestinians, mm-hmm. and that the only reason that they are pulling these Jews out of these settlements is so that no Jews are going to get killed in the, mm-hmm. process. So the fact of the matter is that dirty tricks, pretending to be one individual and initiating an act of terrorism for the purpose of blaming them on another, this is something that has been part of their way of doing business from the beginning. The reason that their motto of the Mossad is by way of deception, thou shalt do war.
Yeah.
This isn't an accident. This is,
right.
this is so intrinsically wound into their nature that them trying to do anything absent deceit and deception would be like trying to make bread without flour.
Yeah.
Please make the distinction between the respect owed the Jews as part of the human race and the respect they demand as Zionists from the non-Jews and the rest of the world.
Well, of course, when you understand that Zionism is a supremacist ideology and that there are people who really do buy into this notion that they're God's chosen people and that they are supermen of sorts, what that means is that the respect that they demand isn't really respect at all, but it is deification. It's worship of their race and worship of their, the position that supposedly they were given as God's chosen people. Now, the kind of respect that typically has been a part of Western civilization, which is this egalitarianism, where we look at our fellow man as an equal human being, these two ideologies cannot live side by side. One is eventually going to dominate over the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so this respect that they demand is not respect at all. It is, like I said, it is deification. It is bowing down before the beast, so to speak.
You call it idolatry.
Exactly, idolatry.
Yeah. Now, one of the greatest political prisoners in the world today, or was political prisoners, was Mordecai Vanunu. And he said that he suffered not only because he exposed or blew the whistle on Israel's nuclear activities, but also because he converted to Christianity. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's absolutely the truth. I mean, when we understand that what is taking place today is just an extension of the ideological war that took place 2,000 years ago in Palestine between this universalist named Jesus Christ that tried to teach that all men were brothers versus this little gang of racial supremacists, the Sanhedrin. When we understand that the end goal of this whole war is the extermination of Christianity and the extermination of all memory of anything that Christ taught, it makes perfect sense then why you would see people such as Mordecai Vanunu and others, by the way, in Israel, who are suffering because of their Christian faith. We have many people, Israel Shahak, Israel Shamir, just a few, who have come forth and talked about the way that Christian and Christian symbols are debased and how they are disrespected, that it was always considered a pious act on the part of Jews to spit at the cross or to spit in a Christian cemetery or spit at a Christian church when passing by.
Yeah. Considering our role in the U.S. In the Cold War, where we tried to contain socialism in Russia, you say it's a contradiction, our friendship or alliance with Israel now, being that the Zionists are cousins to the socialists. Can you comment?
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Will you comment?
Yes, it is. It's an absolute, to call it ironic doesn't go far enough. The fact of the matter is that Zionism is a form of communism. It's just that it's more racially centered than universal communism. And the fact is that most of those who came to Palestine in the early days, that they were card-carrying communists themselves. And Zionism, the state of Israel itself, is a socialist nation. So for us, and in particular these idiotic Christian Zionist organizations and their mouthpieces such as World Net Daily and all the rest of them, who tout Israel as being a democracy and who tout it as being the only free country in the Middle East, this is a joke. This is the same kind of logic that was applied by the communists themselves when they would defend their own system. They would say, well, we are a democratic system and we allow voting. But all of these things were window dressing. So, and the fact of the matter is that had we played our cards right early on, we would have cultivated a friendship with the Arab countries because they were the ones who were most organically opposed to communism.
I have one last question. You say we're in a battle, the last battle for the soul of humanity, a classic case of good versus evil. So my question is this. Do you believe Jesus' greatest fears have been realized?
Yes, I think that they have been. I think that we are in the middle of the apocalypse, and we have been for the last century. And everything that he worked for in the last 2,000 years has all been destroyed. So yes, I think that we are seeing the fulfillment of this. And it's been my desire in writing this book to wake up the Christian world to this reality. They're waiting for this man to show up, this Antichrist man.
Yeah.
But in actuality, he's already here, and it represents itself in this ideology known as Zionism.
Yeah. Now, Mark, I have one more question, but before I ask it, please give your website one more time.
Yes. My website is www.notmywords.com.
Okay.
And as I said earlier, I'm giving away the PDF files to both of my books for free to anyone who wishes to have them. And you can just email me at mrkglenn@yahoo.com, and I will gladly send you those PDF files that can even pass around if you like.
Very good. Now, my final question is that there's a massive ADL and B'nai B'rith spy operation in existence in this country, and it's been in existence for quite some time. How do you think the American people would feel if they knew the extent of how much they're being watched by these secret organizations?
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I hate to be so pessimistic about it, but I don't know that they would care that much at all. I mean, 2 years ago when the business over the passion was going on, it was the ADL who was doing all the screaming about it. And yet the Americans who flocked to see that movie in droves, they never put two and two together, that this domestic branch of the Mossad who spies on Americans, who was responsible for ruining this man's life, Mel Gibson, has been in their midst for the last three-quarters of a century, and yet they really don't know anything about it. If you were to say the ADL to them, they wouldn't know who it was.
Yeah.
And so I hate to be so pessimistic about it, but I don't think that the Americans today are that worried. I think that their freedoms and everything else, they have a perverted notion of what freedom is, and I don't think that they would be that worried about what kind of possible dangers the ADL poses.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully this show and your works will open up a few eyes. The book is called No Beauty and the Beast.
I can't recommend this book enough.
Yeah.
I'm internalizing every crumb in this book.
Yeah. And we're gonna make this book available on Wing Tee within the next week or so, and we just can't recommend it enough. And as you can tell from Mark's responses, this guy is aware of what's going on. So, Mark, thanks a lot, and just keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV with Mr. Morgan Reynolds, who is a Bush administration insider.
He's an economist and an independent scholar.
And he said that 9/11 was a controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
So until tomorrow, keep your eyes open. There's a lot going on.
See you then.